OT After Dark is a podcast run by two occupational therapists and is for adults only. We believe that sex and sexual pleasure are a human right for consenting adults, regardless of ability, age, gender, or sexual orientation. We discuss topics that cover a wide variety of intimacy and sexual practices. To be true to our strong views regarding inclusivity, we use common and slang terms regarding sexual topics, which may be considered explicit. Listener discretion is advised.
We have exciting news to share. We recently partnered with DirectRec, a free app for OT practitioners, PT practitioners, and speech-language pathologists.
DirectRec helps clinicians to find peer-vetted products, and we recently have added our own recommendations of products on DirectRec for sexual health and wellness.
We helped DirectRec get a little extra sexy. DirectRec helps clinicians share products and other digital info, like YouTube videos and Google Docs, with their clients.
DirectRec helps you to track clients' follow-through on your product recommendations. So to start using DirectRec, click on the link on our website at otafterdark.com or in our social media bios.
Hi, I'm Kay.
And I'm JJ.
And we're both occupational therapists.
And we're here talking to you about sex.
We have a repeat guest again today. Dr. Karen McCarthy is back. She was originally on episode 13, A Little Foreign Relations in Arizona.
And she's here this week diving in a little deeper into her research about dating, as well as her experience as being a dating coach.
And she brought a friend.
To give us a little more exposure into the occupational therapy interview process as it relates to dating.
A little interview simulation, if you will.
So sit back and enjoy. So today on OT After Dark, we have Dr. Karen McCarthy, who is an occupational scientist, occupational therapist, dating coach, and stand-up comedian. Welcome, Karen, to OT After Dark.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here and see you both.
We're happy to have you. Your second time on OT After Dark. The other one.
Oh, this might be dating now.
Second date for us. Yes. So, dating is what brought you here. Your research on dating as an occupation. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into that?
Yeah, well, I was just so good at it, you know, that occupation. And then I got married and I had to stop doing it. And I was like, how do I keep using, you know, all these skills? And so I do dating coaching as a private practice, but then I started studying dating in occupational science because I realized that the two go so well together, occupational science and occupational therapy. I don't know if everybody's realizing that, but when you're working with clients or on an occupation such as dating, I realized I don't know enough about dating. And so I embarked on a qualitative research study while I was living in Ireland, really because I noticed that my cultural background of dating and my assumptions were very different. So I decided to do this study at the same time as doing dating coaching, and it really informed my practice. So it was really exciting to start that.
I want to step back a little because it's occurring to me that all our listeners might not really know what occupational science is and how occupational science differentiates from occupational therapy. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So occupational science is the basic science, the study of human beings as occupational beings, looking at the study of occupation, why what we do matters, how it impacts our health and well-being, and form, function, and meaning of it. And so that really informs our practice because it really helps us to think about the actions we're taking in our interventions and our evaluations and how occupations are really important and meaningful to our clients and why they are and what they look like and then how we can adapt them since we know how important they are to our clients. So the therapy is kind of the applied aspect of the science.
What's the form, function, and meaning of dating?
Oh, we're going to get into it.
Let's do it.
You want to get into
yeah,
it?
Oh, yeah. Let's dive right in.
The form, function, and meaning, one of my favorite parts about the research that I did was to research the form, which are more of the observable aspects, the who, what, where, how kind of aspects of an occupation, I had to first go into the history, because the form of dating, like the form of many occupations like cooking or dancing, has a socio and cultural history to it. And I was like, what is dating in Ireland? So I got to go into all the history of like courting in ancient Ireland up until modern day. And it really made me think about how women that I dating coached in Ireland, the Irish women would say, like, I'm really old fashioned when it comes to dating. I'm like, are you? Because here's some old fashioned dating practices. Love spells to the fairies. I don't know if you've done that one. Being traded for a cow or some kind of dowry. And abduction, one of my favorite courting strategies, abductions, which sounds horrible. And sometimes it was not consensual. But other times it was the only time they could do a love match, where they'd like elope or run away together in a fake abduction. And then they had to get married because they were obviously away together for an inappropriate amount of time.
Oh, so sneaky. Breaking, trying to get around the rules. Yeah.
So that was really exciting to see how the history and how that's impacted women and their choices and their autonomy and things like sexual revolution and birth control that really impacted things, but not as much as online dating, which has really revolutionized how dating is taking place. And I would say when I moved to Ireland in 2012, it was just hitting because Tinder had just started and they weren't really into the online sites as much. Like I was on match.com in 99, everybody, my sister says online since 99. I was there from the beginning. And before that, I answered a newspaper ad. So don't tell me. But so Tinder started in 2012 once the apps happened, because they weren't going to pay for a website. So that was kind of a cultural thing too. And the apps didn't seem as desperate or as kind of pathetic as like going online or something. So really I hit in 2012 when apps, Plenty of Fish, OkCupid, and Tinder really kind of exploded things. Now they have like Bumble and some others. But so online dating really changed how dating was practiced in a really quick pace. And so also in this occupation, which you thought you knew in a way, was really transforming and people weren't sure how to do it.
Yeah, I can imagine too, especially now with our cultural climate that we're currently living in with COVID and the pandemic and online dating and how much that must have affected, you know, both the positive and the negative side of dating.
Yeah. No, I do think, you know, I think, and we'll talk to my friend later about dating post-COVID, but I think some of these historical events or even advance in technology can really throw an occupation to change so much, you wonder, is it even the same occupation? And so I think that's why it was really important to do this research. And so we looked at things like how the temporal context impacts occupation. So things like temporal meaning like looking back in history, how did your parents date? How did you think dating was supposed to happen? What was dating in high school versus college? You're looking at over a lifespan or across generations. And then you look at a cultural context. So like, what are some of the cultural aspects of Irish society that impact dating? So there's an emphasis on a drinking culture, or like gender roles and expectations might be part of that. And then you have a virtual and a physical context, because now all of the participants I interviewed, which were 10 women who are straight between the ages of 24 and 34, living in urban areas of Ireland, they were all using both online and in-person strategies. So it was a mix of both there. And then you have the form of dating changes as you go along. So from pre-dating, like when you're searching for people, could be in-person, like going out to the club, or when you're, you know, on Tinder and you're swiping right or left. And then dating, it's like meeting up. And then it's like, well, after a few dates, dating kind of changes. Like, you don't want to go to the movies on your first date or introduce them to your friends on your, so like the activities or the occupations within the occupation of dating are starting to change as you progress. And it's letting you know that you're getting close to perhaps exclusivity, which is also different because you can be sexually exclusive, but still not put the label on it because those actually require different behavior. So there's so many confused looks. Ask some questions.
No, it's fascinating. It's very interesting. So when you're studying the occupation of dating, and you kind of found out, you know, they were doing in person and online, did they have a preference, or was there a difference in what their experience was between the two different forms of dating?
Yeah. And so the meanings, we're talking about form, function, means. So the forms, like those observable aspects, the meaning of it, a lot of that had to do with the emotional experience and subjective experience of the participants. And what they felt, especially since online was so new, was they felt uncomfortable with it. And there was still kind of a shame and stigma around it, Whereas I wasn't used to that because in the US we've been using it for a long time. But there was actually a code that I used, mortified, because that term just kept coming up. I'd be mortified if I was on a date and some of my friends walked in and found me on the date, or I had to introduce my online date to somebody, or if I go home, I turn off my Tinder because I don't want people from home to see that I'm on it. So there's definitely the emotional aspect of that. And the roller coaster, emotional roller coaster, was another theme of mine, because especially with online dating, you could think of roller coaster like the ups and downs. And we know that with dating, you anticipate, you get excited, you get just disappointed, or you get a dick pic and you're totally shocked and offended and you take a break. But there's also, how many hills are you going on the roller coaster? And with online dating, it was more cycles of rejection and hope, because there was so much opportunity for that. So maybe you're starting one stage of dating with one person and getting rejected there, and then you're just starting with another person. And so there's layers of these like emotional kind of ups and downs that are happening. So I think the online technology kind of exacerbates that a bit, that emotional aspect. But dating itself is an emotional occupation. It's about emotional connection. So
I'm stuck on the cycles of rejection and hope. That just makes me not want to date even more than I already don't want to date.
So one of the questions I asked was, so would you even date if you didn't have to, right? Because now we're talking about an occupation that actually a lot of people do not enjoy, would like to skip, has emotional, mental health consequences and physical health sometimes. And it's like, would you even want to date? And there was a bit of joking like, oh no, if you got my man right now, let me know, okay, yeah, that's fine. And then they're like, but actually I do still want to date, because it's this space where you allow me to get to know somebody and I can make choices and I am participating in it. And I wouldn't want to skip that, because I think it's important to get to know somebody before you determine you want to be with them. So it's almost like they didn't have another option. They want to skip it, but they don't want to just get into an arranged marriage or something.
So the implication being there's to the function of it. So would you date if you didn't have to? So saying you don't have to date means there's some end result that we're looking for.
Yes.
So what is the function of dating?
Yeah. So the function of dating, and it's not sexual activity. So what they define dating, defining it in itself was really tough. They didn't use the term dating, but they said it's not dating if it's just for sex. That's getting sexual activity. That's a whole nother thing. And that's great. But dating, one of the intentions has to be that you think you might make a connection with somebody that you're going to continue to be hanging out with or meeting up with. So the intention is there, even if it doesn't work out, that makes it dating. And then the function, what is it that you even want out of this? Like what is, and a lot of it was finding someone to share my life with. And then when we dug into share my life with, travel, my day-to-day activities, go to the movies with, go to concerts. And I'm like, this is an occupation where the intention is to find a partner in occupations. And so I started thinking about this concept of co-occupation and how dating is a co-occupation. It relies on the interactions of others and you're kind of interacting together, but it's also one because you want a partner in occupation. So almost the form and the function is about co-occupations. So I thought that was a really fascinating find, to think that it's leading to more occupational engagement with somebody else. So,
You've strictly done research in Ireland on dating, or you've expanded that?
No, I've only done this qualitative study. And
it'll be interesting. We have a pretty big listenership in Ireland.
I believe so, yes.
It'll be interesting if we get specific feedback on that.
Yeah.
Anything more specific to the research that you want to share?
I do think one other thing is just the defining of dating was really tough. And so I came in there, one of the first questions I asked was, what word do you use? I'm American. We use the term dating. It's not for everybody, because I really didn't want to like put my cultural lens on it. And they were like, yeah, we know you use that term, but we don't really have another term. And so one of the discussions I'm having in my article and trying to rework is, are all occupations named in the lexicon of the culture, which is something that Yerxa and Clark and others have said. So this isn't really named, but it's there and it's changing. But it's an interesting one that not everything is kind of has its own term. The closest thing come up with is meeting up, but then it didn't really always translate either. Mm-hmm. So well, that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. So then I feel like we should segue then to your
I was going to say, coaching. I would love to hear more about dating coaching and what coaching. Dating yeah. coaching means and what does that look like and what do you do as a dating coach?
Oh my God. You know what's so fun about dating coaching is, well, I'm such an occupation snob, as you can probably already tell. I got pinky out.
No, not you.
If you don't mention occupation on your podcast, I'm turning it off. But what I love about dating as an occupation and as occupational therapy is that I'm not focusing on a population, I'm focusing on an occupation. And it's anyone who engages or wants to engage in that occupation. So I've coached anybody from age like 18 to like 68 to like retired, divorced, like coming into college, LGBTQ. So it's just so expansive. And I just think that's really interesting thing to focus on the occupation. And what it was for me is that every OT practice I've had, it's come up as a topic of interest. Maybe because, like you guys, I'm asking about it. How's your love life? What's going on with sexual? I'm always asking, no matter if I'm working with in the well elderly study, when I worked with older adults, when I worked with college students, when I worked in substance abuse, I'm always asking. And then it's like, yeah, I do want to get back to this. So there were a few clients I had that we were working. The first one I had was in the well elderly study. I was only like 24. It's like one of my first clients. And he was like, I'm polyamorous and I want to get into dating online. And I was like, I don't even know. Like, I had to look up terms. I mean, this is 2004. I was not woke at all. I was like, okay, thank God I wasn't judgmental. I was like, okay, let's find websites that are like, can help you to find this? And we signed him up for seniormatch.com. And I just remember that being like a really transformative experience for us to build rapport and for him not to feel judged. And so that really started me on this journey of, there's a lot of things around dating. It's it's complex and it's fun and flirty and sexy, but it's also really deep. You know, when you talk about love and meaning and what you want at the end of your life. So it's like, it's that perfect. It's just like me. Funny. So it's just this perfect combo.
Just like you.
Humility.
Humility. Yes.
But then, but Ireland was the first time I did a private practice. So this was always like wherever I was working, it could be part of it. So I think that's for any of the listeners out there, ask about dating and it could be part of their goals. But I then decided, like when I was in Ireland, I was like, oh, this is so new, the technology, they don't know what they're doing. That's fine. I don't know what they're doing either. I can't come in and say, here's the way to date. But they were definitely like unhappy with how things were going and unsure. And I was like, a coach could come in and just help you to figure out what you want to do with this and like help you to strategize. And I use a lot of motivational interviewing, goal setting. I mean, we're creating occupational profiles online, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're showcasing, you know, some of them don't have much room like Tinder or something, but even the pictures you choose, we would do photo shoots around town of here's a photo of you doing your favorite occupation. So this one client of mine, he came with different outfits. And then he's like, okay, first we're going to go in front of the opera house. I'm going to have two fake tickets because I like going to the opera. And then we're going to go close at wine tasting. And then I'm going to be at the golf course. So we were running around town, like in these occupation-centered photos.
That's amazing. Just, like, so that's awesome. I love that. Like, I don't think I've ever thought about that as like a dating profile being a mini occupational profile. But it's perfect.
It is perfect.
You're showcasing your identity, and so much of your identity are the things that you do.
So those
are some of the things I did. What do you think?
Well, I'm just curious where these initial clients were being pulled from.
I just pull them off the street. That's what I do.
I can see you. I can see you doing that.
You look like you need to date.
Wrong. I point at them. Wrong.
I don't know you well, Karen, but I know you well enough that I could actually see you doing that.
True. That's probably why I don't seek out clients when I'm drinking. I'd be like, I have eavesdropped on people and definitely given unsolicited advice. Been like, I don't think he's that into you. It's like, bitch, who asked her? Like, it's definitely like that scene from Sex and the City. So the way I do that, and you have to think about who's your multidisciplinary team. So a multidisciplinary team are counselors and makeover artists and photographers. Like when I'm developing my team and I think about referral source, where are people going to find out about this? I started advertising in like the brochure in Cork where I lived. And it was kind of like the what's on in the city, but they also had things like massage and yoga and other services. So I just put myself in there and that was all I needed to do. I didn't even need to do any online, but I think online advertising would be really great to do. Unfortunately, much online advertising for dating get censored because they don't want you kind of running your own dating matchmaking programs and stuff. So like places like Tinder or Facebook don't really allow a lot of those services to be advertised online. But so yeah, so that's how I find clients. It's just through this brochure and word of mouth. And so the more clients I had, the more they tell their friends. Sometimes I do group interventions. So we'd meet, imagine the two of you, glass of wine, meet at your house, and we're, instead of the pre-party, it's the pre-OT session. So we're talking about what's going to happen tonight. What are we wearing? Where are we, what are we doing? What do you want to do? What are you looking for? Okay, let's go. And then it's occupation-based, and we go into the bar. We're talking about it. Hey, check back in. I don't have the ear mic like Hitch, but Will Smith is an occupational therapist. Let's be honest. Like, come on back. And that, you know, was just like,
we that were is all a,
like, there. And by the end of the night, that is your a, clients. And maybe
that's a deep, deep Will Smith reference that I'm not sure everyone's going to get.
Oh, that Hitch?
Yes.
Hitch. If you could call who's the most OT in a movie, I think it's Hitch.
I know what the age demographics of our listeners are, and I feel like that's a deep cut. So everybody look up Hitch.
We'll put the trailer up on the website so everybody can watch it.
Oh yeah. Well, this is also how I knew that the demographics is I got called out for a Sex and the City reference, which I've already just done.
Yes.
So he's not that into you scene. So we all know. Okay. Elder millennial Karen. I got it. You can't see me, but yes, it's me.
I'm straight up Gen X, so you're fine.
Part of qualitative research is being your positionality and reflexivity statement. So I have to basically I wrote my dating autobiography before I started the research, which I know you want a copy of.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
I do.
It's a romance novel and it's got Fabio on the cover, other dated reference. But you got to own up to your shit, because when people are telling you about their dating lives, you have to not come in with your own bias and assumptions or judgment. You can't give advice. They're asking you, you're a girl, you know, I'm coaching a straight guy. And he's like, well, you're a girl, what should I do? And I'm like, you know, people respond in many different ways. Mm-hmm. Here, what do you think are some ideas? You just have to keep throwing it back, because I'm just not going to give advice.
Excellent. I like that. You just keep asking more questions.
Yeah.
It's like my favorite strategy.
Just reflect. No, the tennis of reflection, toss back. A little reflection, toss it back. Maybe an evocative question thrown in there. Or if you're ever going to give advice, well, you know what? How about you come up with a couple and I'll come up with a couple and like, let's share it out. But not like one thing, because it gets too weighted. And everything's like, I have to go online. She said go online. It's like, online's not for everybody. Just because I've been online since 99 doesn't mean you should be.
Online since 99. So do you generally have specific outcomes that you're do people come in with like, this is the outcome I want? Very specific.
Yeah, a wedding invitation. Nobody has invited me to a wedding yet. Because marriage, as we know, is the ultimate success of dating.
Of course. Right. Yeah. No.
Pretty fucking miserable in a marriage. Right. So actually a lot of my clients will seckles with them and they'll say, I will get a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, getting a girlfriend depends on the consent of another person. So let's just focus on what your actions are. Like, what do you think the steps that you'll take to get there? Okay, I will join a new club, like a sports club. I will go online twice a week. So it really does turn into more of those measurable actions that they want to take throughout the week, and not the outcome of somebody loving you or committing a lifelong commitment to you.
But yeah, it's about that individual and not, like you said, that individual plus somebody else. It's okay, well, let's focus on you and what can you do in this situation.
Well, and that is the interesting part. It is a co-occupation, but I'm never interacting with the other co-partner.
Oh, that's...
So you're only getting one side of this occupation that's really shared and collaborative. So that's a limitation.
Which could be a very skewed version of events.
Hmm. Yeah, but so is all of our interactions with our clients, right? It's all their perception of what's, you know, happening in their world. So I live in multiple realities, and I will live in my client's reality for a while. I'm not going to be like, I don't think so. I don't think you're very attractive. You are.
Anything else you want to say about coaching before we invite our next guest? Or if you want to set up our next guest.
I do think, you know, with coaching, and I think why I've invited my friend to come on as well, is that it's just really important to remind yourself that you don't have to be the expert in dating. So although obviously I sound like I know it all, but like I can come into this. I've taught cooking groups, right? We've all been there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to cook. OTs, like we think we have to be an expert in dating to do dating, or like, and I'm sure you've come across this with sexuality. It's like open-minded, yeah, curiosity, collaborative approach, and knowledge about occupation is going to go mm-hmm. so far that you don't have to feel like you're the expert. And so I think what I'm bringing on my friend is I'm acknowledging I haven't date coached anybody in a year. Like I haven't done any coaching since COVID hit. And that is a really huge change. Like imagine when I go back out there now and it's like, I don't even know what people are saying online, how they're doing this. Are they on Zoom? Are they in person? What's the mask criteria? So there's a lot. So I'm going to use this as the model of, you know, how do you kind of find out from this person because they're the expert in their own occupational life. So like, how do you use that? And then kind of your knowledge of occupation helps to guide it possibly, but.
All right. So,
but I'm not saying that my friend wants my coaching. So stages of change, I think she's probably just fine. So it'll model kind of an open-ended interview, but I don't know if it's going to go towards any goal setting.
We'll get an idea of what the coaching looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be fun.
So we'll take a quick pause. And we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
And we are back. And we're back with Karen McCarthy. And we are also joined with Robin. And Karen is going to complete a semi-structured interview here with Robin about dating. So take it away, Karen and Robin.
Yeah. Well, it sounds so formal, but it did say semi-structured. So Robin is my best friend from high school. And when I thought about doing this podcast, I just thought, you know, I really haven't dated coached anybody for over a year. And obviously the pandemic and everything has really thrown that occupation for a loop and it's really changed. And so I thought, you know what, it's really important to model that we need to always stay current about what's happening with people in dating and not have an assumption about what that is. So Robin, thanks for joining today and having this chat with me. And you know, I study, you know, research dating and I do dating coaching, but you know, you're definitely the expert in your own dating life. And so I wanted to start with asking you about how would you define dating? Because I don't want to have an assumption of what dating is for you. So what would you define that
as? I thought that was a really interesting question because I feel like it has changed so much over the years. I just feel like it's become much more casual in a way. And so I was thinking about it as just like, from my perspective, I think it's two people meeting up and having a conversation and then wanting to see if they want to continue that conversation another time and then wanting to see if they want to continue that conversation another time. And then if that conversation will eventually lead to intimacy. Mm. And then just wanting to see then if you are fine with each other's sniffles and idiosyncrasies from there on out.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing from you is that it's a series of meeting up over time.
I think
And you're saying conversations a lot. So when you're having these conversations, are there other things that you're doing or is it really just kind of talk based on your, that he's dating?
For me, it's talk based. I don't really do activities or anything like that. No, honestly, I never really like gone, I'm like, let's go on a hike or let's do axe throwing or let's go golf or something like that. I remember one time, probably one of my biggest date fails, this guy invited me to like this choir concert and I thought it was like, oh, is it orchestral or is it choir? And then I show up and I got all dressed up and then it was just us sitting in a church with, three guys just like, you know, for 2 hours straight.
Sounds hot.
And I mean, there was just like nothing to talk about. And then it's like, so like intermission came. It's just like, so when did you move to New York City? It was very awkward. And then like, by the time the date ended, I'm kind of like, well, we should try to talk and connect. I was like, that was kind of, you know, too much silence, too many silences. So yeah. I'm like, well, do you want to just stop here and have a drink? And he said, oh, actually I'm really tired and I want to go home. And so I was like, well, so I just like sat next to a complete stranger for 2 hours watching like terrible choir music. And then now I have to go home. And I was pissed too because I was sick. And like, yeah. I was like, but he invited me to this thing, so I should go. I was so pissed. And then he actually followed up with a text the next day and said, oh, I just didn't feel like there was a connection. I'm like, well, how could there be a connection? You know, we didn't have the time or anywhere to even like connect in any way.
So what I'm hearing from you is that when you're on a date, it really is about connection and the conversations you're having. And that's what determines connection, not necessarily always what you're doing. Like you might be at a bar having a drink or you're listening to music, but it's more about the banter, the stuff that's happening that makes you feel like you're connected. Yeah.
For me, that is. For me, definitely. Like, I know I do have friends who prefer to, like, go to a concert or do something like that, have something more activity-based. I feel that that's more later on. Okay. Like, I just feel like usually the first date, usually you meet up for drinks, and then you have a conversation, and then maybe you meet up again and have drinks and or some food, or maybe you hook up, I don't know, depending on where your comfort level. And then later you start doing activities. Some people like to do it much sooner.
Yeah. So almost the activities change or get altered as you move along. So it starts with like a beverage of some sort, coffee, drinks or something. Then you might move to food. You don't want to start with a dinner date, but then you can add on things like a show or axe throwing, which just seems very intense. It depends what you're aiming at. But
you have that? Axe throwing?
Oh, we have axe throwing. Yes. Oh, you do? Personally, okay. I've been a lumberjack for many years, so this has been a role that I've... Do you feel like if you had an activity at the start, like your first date was axe throwing, would that be like too much? Like you feel like that's not appropriate for this stage of dating, or what do you think?
No, I don't think so. It's just, I just feel like there's more pressure, especially if you're trying to axe throw and like to perform. I would just much rather try to get to know the person and see if there's like, if we have any commonalities. I really don't care about his... whether or not he can make the bullseye.
Yeah. So it's interesting that the commonalities or the connection seems to be about like maybe things, interests that you have or commonalities or values or humor. And I'm making a few guesses here, but not as much. Sometimes people make a connection over an activity, but it doesn't seem like that's as pertinent to you as like the verbal interchange.
Yeah. Kind of between. Okay. And for some people, it really is. Some people just like to do activities.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of loosens them up and then you can try to have a conversation afterwards. Yeah.
Or they have a certain activity that they really enjoy. Like I really like bike riding or something. And then they want somebody to do that with. So maybe they lead with that. But obviously your skills are in conversational exchange, Robin. So
I would hope so.
So you've kind of mentioned how dating changes over like from first date to like subsequent dates. How does dating change over time for you? So we think about from, you know, your early years of dating to now, or maybe even how it changes throughout the year, how it changes for you.
Well, I feel like the app dating has completely changed the culture. I don't know for the better or worse, but it's different. It's crystallized in that change. Dating has become way more casual than it used to. Like it's, you meet someone and, you know, there's not even a whole thing of like, is he going to pay? Is she, you know, like usually you go Dutch. Because you go on so many more dates, it just gets a lot more expensive. And I feel that in that too, because it's become more casual, there's more of a tendency to flake too and cancel last minute plans because you haven't really met this person. Like, you know, they're just somebody in your phone. They don't really exist yet. So it's so much easier to just say, hey, not tonight. Or, you know, New Yorkers are busy all the time. So, When I would say when we were doing like the straight on online dating, for whatever reason, you met up with people when you were actually connected on your computer as opposed to on your phone.
Okay. So you're even talking about the difference between online dating as an app based versus the web based.
Mm-hmm.
Like the original, like the match.com, the eHarmony stuff to the app.
When on your phone.
Yeah. So when you say casual, and I heard you say like gender roles or norms or something is casual. And then also, are you talking about sexuality or what do you mean by casual?
Way less formal. I don't really see that there's much, you don't really have to dress up as much, you know. I usually go like right after work, I'm still in my jeans sometimes. You know, I try to look cute, you know, as much as you can, but there's no... I'm not stressing too much about the outfit or, you know, I might like brush up on the makeup a little bit or something like that. But, Yeah, it's just like, okay, I'm gonna go meet up with this person and have a conversation and then move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
I find that people usually have an activity planned right after the date. They're like, oh, I have blah 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 to get to, so I gotta run.
Okay. So it's kind of the time aspect of it has also been like, it's shorter. It's like 30 minutes to an hour or something. I've got something else. I'm coming from work. It's not a huge occasion.
No.
Okay.
No.
And would you say that dating takes place in person and online, or is it only dating when you're meeting up in person?
Yeah, that's interesting too, because I had an incident where I was out of town for like a whole month, but then I had like this whole text thing with a person that I met on the dating app, and we texted like almost every single day. So it felt like we were dating, and he was very involved. But then as soon as I got home and we met up once, and then that was it.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, you can still feed the ego, or you can still get the attention without having to make the actual commitment or put in, like, invest the time.
Yeah.
And then once it became real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing from you as well is that it seems like it's a very emotional process, that there's a lot of like kind of disappointments that happen, or like you're kind of building up anticipation, like with this one story. How do you feel like the emotions are at play with dating for you?
I remember once a really good friend of mine, she was out of the dating pool for a really long time, and she decided to get into app dating. And so that's how we became friends at work, because she came up to me and she's like, I'm thinking about starting app dating. And my response was, I hope you like crying.
Is crying a new occupation that you take on when you start dating?
It's a side hustle that I've taken up. resentfully, but there is a lot of like ups and downs with it. You know, you might like you go through so many people, you talk to so many people, sometimes conversations just fall off. A lot of that is like, could be, you know, you just don't really, you'll start a conversation and then just you don't even meet up with the person. I used to have like a three exchange rule, like exchange three times on the text, I'll give one alley-oop. I'll be like, oh, I'd love to continue this conversation, but I'd much rather do it in person, so that you're not in the continuum on the phone, you know, texting with one another constantly. And sometimes they'll pick up on that hint and be like, oh, where would you like to, or if they're like, oh, I like your style, and then never follow through on it. That happens a lot too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I let those go. I was like, all right, I tried. Okay. Moving on to the next one, you know? And you're talking to like multiple people at the same time, and you have to know that the other person is talking to multiple people at the same time. And so therefore it's hard not to become invested. You don't want to get too excited about someone. And I hate that. I really, really hate that, because you never know when the other shoe's going to drop.
Yeah. So I'm hearing that the highs and the lows, the kind of the emotional investment, but and the practicality, it seems like you also have approaches that you use, like, here's my boundaries, or here's my strategy, like, that's it, I'm not doing this anymore, or here's kind of my hard and fast rule.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying you always have to keep it, but it seems like you've kind of come up with strategies through your experience that work for you.
Yeah, out of necessity, you have to keep talking to two. And it's like, that's interesting too, like, you're dating, but you're just talking to people, right? Like, yeah, you can go up and have a conversation. So dating, a lot of times, even when you're hooking up with someone, it's like you're just talking.
Yeah.
That's often, that's been a normal term for a while. It's like, oh, I've been talking to this guy, met up with him a couple of times, you know, so everything's just become so much more casual.
Yeah. So I think about the intention of dating. What is it that motivates you to date?
Partnership, eventually finding and wanting partnership. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder than I would have liked. That is the angle. That's why I keep doing it. You know, you just, unfortunately, it's not going to work out a lot of times, but you just got to keep showing up. And
yeah,
I don't think there's any one thing you can do right or wrong. It's not like, you know, turn around three times wiggle your nose and do a dance around the full moon, you know, and then you'll find the perfect partner. It's just a matter of showing up and having to keep doing it, no matter, even when you don't want to.
So it seems like it's really important, like the showing up, being resilient. And it doesn't seem like you're really seeing an alternative. Do you feel like that dating has to take place to find partnership, or is there an alternative?
I mean, if it doesn't, can you let me know? Because I'm tired of this.
I'll let you know. Well, in an ideal world, Robin, would you even date? Do you find value in the dating process itself?
I'm sure there is value in it. I definitely, you know, over time, it's like, oh, I mean, even the bad dates, sometimes it's like, you're like, oh, I didn't see this part of New York before. I never even heard of this bar before. And I went here and that was fun. Or this guy took me to this restaurant one time that I never would have probably discovered had I not been there. You know, I think there is value in that. And sometimes just getting a different, you know, perspective, having a conversation with someone, you know, and just hearing a different point of view or different experiences.
Yeah.
There is value in that, you know.
So you can kind of find some things that are valuable while other things are really hard along the process. And overall, you're looking for this partnership. And for you, have you defined what that partnership is, or is it pretty open for you, or?
Two people wanting to make decisions together, and valuing each other for the long haul.
Yeah. Well, Robin, I got to know you a little bit better today. I didn't know that was possible. For sharing all your dating experiences, it really tied in a lot of the themes that we've already talked about with dating and everything. So I didn't talk about COVID, though. Did we want to talk about COVID?
You want to talk about it? I mean, I'm tired of it. I'm so sick of it.
How did COVID change dating? Do you think, if you were going to predict how dating will change in the future, do you think the pandemic, just like online dating, might spin dating in a different direction?
I personally don't think so. I think everyone's wanting to meet up again. However, I do get the occasional people like, hey, do you want to do a video chat? I'm like, no, I'm tired of that.
And was that something that was happening more in the beginning of the pandemic, that video chat was, you were okay with, or has it always been a...
Yeah, I tried it. I did. I tried it. I wasn't into it. I kind of didn't. I just stopped doing it. I just didn't feel it was necessary. Like, especially when, I don't know, especially when the Black Lives Matter movement, I'm just like, why am I trying to date right now? I just felt like there were more important things, you know? And no, it's just like the problem with dating apps too is like you see the same people over and over again. So you just kind of hit them up like, oh, how you been?
Yeah.
I dated you 7 years ago.
So for you during the pandemic, did you use it as an opportunity to kind of like take a break? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Kind of put that occupation on hold.
Yeah.
And then kind of, I do feel like you're coming back to it now. Are you still thinking about it, or?
No, absolutely. No, I feel like, so the trend or like the rumor going around is that now that everyone's getting vaccinated, it's called like hashtag slutty summer. So everyone's just going to go nuts this summer, hooking up and everything.
Is that the spinoff of 70s Summer of Love? But they really just...
No, it's slutty. So much
it is,
more
it is slut shaming the summer. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. Much more with the younger crowd. I even like put that in my dating profile. It's just like, is it futile to look for a relationship knowing slutty summer is looming upon us? And I've gotten a lot of fun responses to that. Great. And but most of the men, you know, it's like, I'm 40 years old now, so it's just like most of the men are like, no, I don't think so. It's like, prove it.
Bloody summer is looming. Well, I can't wait to catch up on all your shenanigans.
Yeah.
It seems like you're staying focused, so you're not altering your path that you want to stay focused on partnership. But
Yeah. And then the whole, I don't know. And then they get told, like, it'll happen when you least expect it. It's like, been least expecting that. I mean, the expectations are so low now.
Well, nobody likes the unsolicited advice or the random sayings, you know. That
love those.
Oh. It'll will happen when you least expect it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. It was like a pandemic.
Yeah. Well, do we have any questions from our podcast hosts, or what do you think?
My question is, Karen, what would the next step be after you interview somebody?
Yeah. So after that, I don't know if Robin's in any kind of stage of change, if she wants to do anything about dating or not, you know, because it's frustrating. So everybody's frustrated with it. But does Robin feel like she's doing it in the way that she wants to do it? So if she does and she's good with that, then she's good. Now, if she's my client, she's saying, I want to do this differently. I wish I could do this, or I need to do this. Then I'm like, okay, what would that look like? And do you want to do some of that together? And, you know, she's like, I need to just do a whole different app. I'm tired of this, or I need to start joining other social clubs because I think when I naturally meet people, that's better. So I'm listening for that change talk and I'm thinking, where do we go? And how do we set like practical goals together that we would do together? I wasn't really hearing from Robin, and maybe you'll correct me, Robin, like that, anything that you wanted to do differently, if that's.
I think there was a different way. I've tried trying to meet people in real life, like trying to go to different events and everything. It's just really unfortunate that we're so tied to our technology now. Mm-hmm. And even when you go to a bar, it's so sad. Like we go to a bar, people don't go to a bar to meet anyone anymore. They go there to meet a date, you know, that's already been pre-planned. So I feel like the whole bar culture in general has changed entirely too.
Yeah, that's actually something that the Ireland women said in my studies, that especially pub culture in Ireland, it's a very big part of the culture.
Yeah.
And they said dating apps changed pub culture because you wouldn't go to meet somebody more because, as in quoted from one of my participants, well, you didn't know if he was married or a creepy Christian. So I'm not going to go up to some random guy in a bar. Like, I'd like to profile it and then know, but like, you almost have like that safety too of like, oh, are you, you know, on the app or not?
Yeah, there's a lot of married men on the dating apps too, let me tell you.
Yep.
My friend warned me. He goes, oh, he goes, by the way, now that slutty summer's coming, he's like, get ready to meet a lot of married men.
Next study, dating for married men.
Yeah.
It's a whole other occupation, incognito.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Well, I need to study it to find out the motivations. We need to figure
that would be an interesting out. Study.
It's called a pandemic.
Yeah. So it feels like Robin, kind of to summarize, like you're frustrated, but you're also feeling like you're doing everything you can, and that it's more that the way it exists is just hard. And it's not anything that you're not doing or not trying, like you took a break because you needed a break, and you're back doing it the way you want to do it. So I would almost, if this was an OT session, I would be like, it seems like you're good with dating and how you're doing it. It is frustrating. I would empathize, but then I would be like, see what else, we'd probably move on to another goal area.
Right.
Yeah. You don't want to force it, you know, mm-hmm. just because she's not in her terms, like whatever was success, however you define it, you are successful in that you're doing all the things that you need to do that according to your values. Mm-hmm. You just might not be getting that outcome yet, but so often the outcome, and especially in this occupation, isn't always related to your efforts.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten relationships out of dating apps before, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't blame the dating app. It's just like, this is just the avenue which we met, and this is how we met.
And there are other dating coaches that you can get. So you can pay for services, like people will write your profiles for you. You can do matchmaking, but that makes you a passive consumer, which I think is a fine service, but it wouldn't be an OT because mm-hmm. an OT wouldn't do the things for you. They would be talking to you and kind of helping you with the skills and abilities to be able to do that, or kind of analyzing your occupation, but they wouldn't be like, let me set you up with somebody. That's mm-hmm. like a whole different
yeah.
role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I got my profile down to a science. I've actually been complimented on my profile many times. Only one picture of your pet. You can't have multiple pictures with your pets. Comes off a little too weird. First picture has to be the face. They have to show a full body. They have to be recent. I went out with a guy last night, and unfortunately, he must have been about 10 to 20 pounds heavier than his photos. Yeah. And it's fine. He was lovely, very witty, but it's just like, you got to keep that updated.
Well, I think it's not always about the weight or the height. It's a misrepresentation that people feel like people aren't being authentic. And then it's like, and women will lie about weight and height, and men will lie about those age and as well, you know, so that's,
there's no filters, take out the filters.
Yeah.
And do not post pictures with your friends.
Especially if your friends are hotter than you, which is why I never post ones with me, Robin. Because it's just, it's not going to go well.
Every time I see a dude with like his first profile picture is with his friend, I'm like, oh, he's the least hot friend. And then I like scroll down. I'm like, yep, it's the least hot friend. Every time. Hands down. It's just like, why even post it with a friend? I don't understand that.
You're making dating sound great.
But yet if I was coaching you, and even though I like all of these rules and stuff, I couldn't go in and be like, Robin, here's what you need to do. You're going to need 3 photos. You're going to need one with it. Like, then I'm just leading too much. I'm giving too much advice. I would say more like, what do you think when you look at profiles? What stands out to you? And what is it that you would like to showcase? And so I'm really just coaching more than like, well, you got to get rid of that. And sometimes it comes out, you know, when you're like.
And I think, but I think on a broader level, I really, so much gratitude for you coming on no matter what. On a broader level, so much gratitude, because I think you just gave a great example, especially for students that listen, of how an interview looks, and that idea that we shouldn't be forcing anything. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be forcing ideas on dating. We shouldn't be forcing, like, you need to put your own socks on. Yeah. Like, the whole, that's just that broad idea. That was a great example of interviewing skills.
Well, I think we would lose the trust. Like, if Robin felt like at some time that I was saying there was a right way to do it and she wasn't doing it, I just feel like that might not, it wouldn't be confidence building for Robin. Like, it just, and it wouldn't be even true, because why do I know a right way of doing something?
That's
I don't live in New York and I'm not Robin.
Yeah. So. I'm also not an occupational therapist, so I can tell these people.
Oh yeah, Robin, feel free. To whatever inner dialogue I'm having that I'm holding back, anybody else, feel free to unleash it. That's fine. I've never no tea to my friends, actually.
I'm sure some people got some.
I'm surprised I'm no tea, because I'll probably be yelling at her about other stuff. You know,
I'm sure some listeners will get some ideas on what to put on their dating profile and what to look at. Do you have any final questions?
I think this was a great example. I think this was perfect. Thank you so much for being on OT After Dark.
My really pleasure. It's fun. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Robin.
Anytime.
Yeah.
We're back for one final segment, back down to the OT practitioners to kind of debrief that last segment and talk about some of the themes that we noticed.
Well, you know, we love reflection.
We do love reflection. Of course.
Now it's time to reflect on the process. So if you were listening to that interview, and hopefully my intention with that interview was open-ended, non-judgment. If I asked a question and I felt like it was leading, I might give like 2 options to, like, you know, having them define something on their own terms, a little use of humor. So that's kind of my approach. I still feel like I'm being my authentic self, but it's a little bit more guarded, like giving advice or kind of leading too much. So that was kind of my intent. But I do feel like some themes came up that, even from Robin dating in New York during COVID over the past year, kind of related to the women in Ireland I interviewed, and that was a few years ago. So it's kind of interesting how, you know, you think about the transferability of research, you know, we can't always say that it's definitely transferring completely, but I think themes of occupation can. So I don't know if you guys, did you notice any themes that came up from Robin's talk that resonated with you from the Ireland research?
Well, definitely the highs and lows of rejection and hope.
Yeah, the emotional roller coaster. The highs and lows.
Yes. It was right there.
It's emotion. So one thing to understand is your client is going through an emotional process, and there are highs and lows, and that you might be meeting with them at different times of that. So it's an occupation with an emotional aspect to it, for sure.
One thing that struck me too was generational differences. Like, she could speak to the difference of how dating was at one point in her life, and how it's more casual now. Whereas I think if you had a conversation with somebody younger, I would guess, I don't know, but I would guess that the casual nature is the norm for some people.
Yeah. So we have a shift in culture, but we also have her reflecting back and seeing how her practice of this occupation has changed over time, depending on the advent of technology, maybe her own values about what she wanted. And then she was also commenting on Generations with Slutty Summer coming up. Mm-hmm. That like almost like that's for the younger group. I'm not going to participate, but she's seeing that these are existing, these different values and ways of doing the occupation at the same time. And they're kind of, and she's bringing with her her occupational past of dating. So into these dates, she's remembering what it was like and kind of bringing those practices into it, even if it's not exactly the same now.
Yeah. And it kind of like piggyback on that and kind of what I was thinking. And I was, as I was jotting down my notes and thinking about like that personal definition of what does dating mean? And so, you know, we're talking about these different generational concepts. So I think of like my dating experience. And so I am no longer dating to find a partner. I'm in a committed monogamous relationship. You know, we have a child, you know, so, and that kind of takes up that piece. So dating for me now has kind of morphed into this new concept where it's still about intimacy and connection, like we've talked about, but now it's about intimacy and connection with my partner who I've been with for, you know, number of years, but dating, but we still are dating each other. It's just dating is now a different concept than what it used to look like. And I think that's just an interesting kind of way to view that too.
Well, we did. So I did ask in my research, when does dating end? When does it begin? And when does it end? And when it ends, which I found surprising, which actually is different than the literature by Seema Krishnagiri, which is the first occupational science article about mate selection, if you're interested in that. But then that was in the late 90s. But she talked about dating continuing until marriage. And actually, the participants in my study said dating ends when it's stopped communication, you're getting ghosted, or commitment. So you're in a relationship, then dating ends, and then you're going on dates, but it's to hang out with each other and to connect and to bond, and it's intimate, but it's not in the same way to determine if this is someone you're going to continue seeing. So that once the determination is made, it almost seems like the dating stops and then you're going on dates. So that, but from the outside, they all look like dates. Mm-hmm. So that's why you don't know what an occupation is until you talk with somebody about what that meaning of it is for them.
Do you have any thoughts of writing an entire book on dating as an occupation?
Oh, an entire book.
I feel like that could be an entire book. Well, it would be fun.
You know, I actually like the book by Aziz Ansari. Sorry, I know. There's things that he has to forgive himself for and everything. But the book, Modern Dating, actually goes through dating in different countries with a researcher. And I was like, if I could like be a partner co-author, kind of like with the comedian who's dating, and then I'm doing like the research side of it, and we write something together that's like a popular book, I think that would be really fun.
That would
and much
be amazing.
Thinking about dissemination of research, it's much more digestible than maybe like no offense, Journal of Occupational Science, I want you. This is not saying I don't want you. I might date other people. You said I cannot submit to other journals right now, so I'm keeping that exclusivity, but I will put it out there. If you don't want this, I'll put it out there.
That would be an amazing book. That would be really fun.
Yeah. And then you can have like occupational, like maybe even like people's like experiences in each chapter. So it's like really mm-hmm. the person with the occupational side of it. And it really shows you that occupational science is so translatable to everyday mm-hmm. life. Like really these concepts that we're talking about, like time, tempo, and temporality of occupation, or identity, form, function, and meaning. I mean, if you talk about dating, it's really right there. Mm-hmm. And it's like a fun, sexy topic to talk about, but it really highlights occupational science for your students too. If you ever mm-hmm. want to unpack an occupation, it's always fun to do. So, like culture, she brought out a little bit with like gender roles changing. It's more casual, how activities change. She was really conversation-based, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. So for her, it didn't seem like what you were doing is important as how the conversation and the connection was going. But I do know her to be a very, like, she's a writer, she's a comedian, she's an interviewer, you know, so I think that's a real strong value of hers, but maybe not as many occupations on the date. So that would have been a little bit different. Possibly.
Do you have any final thoughts for the day on dating as an occupation?
Well, it's so rapidly transforming that we don't even know what it is, right? And it's going to keep going. So I think this is definitely an area that, and think about all the cultures and the age groups and the lifestyles that we haven't, like what's dating for polyamorous persons mm-hmm. or what's dating for people in different areas. And so I think it's really can tell us a lot about us as human beings when we look into dating. Like it's not just about dating, mm-hmm. you know, it's about what we value, what we want out of life. Like when we got deep, didn't we? Mm-hmm. She wanted a partner in life to share her life with, to understand her, to connect with. I mean, when you are thinking like working in palliative care, and the client, and they say, you know, what's the thing in the end of the day? You know, it was like who you loved, who you were with. And it's like, well, dating is the occupation that helps you to get there. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we don't have another way right now for some people. Mm-hmm. So like it or not, this occupation is coming. It's like a job search. I enjoyed it though.
Well, Karen, thank you so much. As always, it's a pleasure to have you here on OT After Dark. And we hope to have you. We hope to have you again with some updated research on some dating.
Yeah, let's do it.
We were so happy to have Karen back on the show to talk more in depth about her work with dating as an occupation.
Yeah, so happy to have her back. It's always a pleasure to have Karen.
What was your takeaway?
You know, I think some of the biggest things for me was, one, the discussion about the concept of occupational science and mm-hmm. really looking at dating as an occupation. And especially, too, I found it really interesting about the concept of co-occupation mm-hmm. that, you know, you're looking for someone else to engage in these occupations with.
Looking for someone to do more occupations with and find more occupations.
So much occupations happening in this episode.
Occupation everywhere.
Whoop, whoop.
All right.
Yeah, and I also love, too, what she said was, you know, especially with dating, it's all about the occupation and not the population. Mm-hmm. Think about how many different populations engage in the occupation of dating.
And how many populations have some barriers, some significant barriers to the occupation of dating.
Yeah.
So much to think about. Mm-hmm. On the website, we will have some of the resources that Karen mentioned.
And we'll also have links to her research study on her research with dating in Ireland. And then also we will have a link to her dating coaching website, which is KarenMcCarthyCoaching.com.
On that note, remember,
as always,
sex is an ADL.
Cheers!